Luke chapter 8 and from verse 26. They sailed to the region of the Gerasenes, which is across the lake from Galilee. When Jesus stepped ashore, he was met by a demon-possessed man from the town. For a long time, this man had not worn clothes or lived in a house, but had lived in the tombs. When he saw Jesus, he cried out and fell at his feet, shouting at the top of his voice, What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, don't torture me. For Jesus had commanded the impure spirit to come out of the man. Many times it had seized him, and though he was chained hand and foot and kept under guard, he had broken his chains and had been driven by the demon into solitary places. Jesus asked him, What is your name? Legion, he replied, because many demons had gone into him. And they begged Jesus repeatedly not to order them to go into the abyss. A large herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside. The demons begged Jesus to let them go into the pigs, and he gave them permission. When the demons came out of the man, they went into the pigs, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and was drowned. When those tending the pigs saw what had happened, they ran off and reported this in the town and countryside. And the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus and found the man from whom the demons had gone out, sitting at Jesus' feet, dressed and in his right mind, they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people how the demon-possessed man had been cured. Then all the people of the region of the Gerasenes asked Jesus to leave them, because they were overcome with fear. So he got into the boat and left. The man from whom the demons had gone out begged to go with him, but Jesus sent him away, saying, Return home and tell how much God has done for you. So the man went away and told all over the town how much Jesus had done for him. Now, in reading this story, and as we think about this man of the Gerasenes, I doubt we feel any connection with him. Not only was it thousands of miles away, 2,000 years ago, but, you know, here we are in Oxford, respectable, sane, calm. We have homes to live in, we have jobs to do or studies to study, and we don't feel any connection with this man. And so perhaps the point of the story, we might think, is, well, to encourage us to reach the most desperate and needy of people. And certainly the story encourages us to see that Jesus reaches out to such people, the very desperate and worst of people in the worst of conditions. But the point of the story is not all about us reaching the needy. Actually, the irony is that at the end of the story, it's this man who's the evangelist. This one who was so desperate is the one bringing the message of Jesus to others. No, what we're really seeing is a remarkable encounter between Jesus and Satan. Between Jesus and this demon-possessed man. And we see Jesus' unique love and power to save someone. Jesus' love and power stand in contrast to the destructive power of Satan and also the inadequacy of human help. Now, demon possession is unusual. But Satan's power and influence are widespread, right across the world. Everyone born into this world is born as part of his kingdom. That is the sad reality. We're children of Adam. Adam who turned against God, and in turning against God, joined with Satan. You remember how Adam and Eve followed the serpent rather than God. And so the whole human race is under the power of the evil one. And we see Satan's destructive work in this world. On Thursday, we will celebrate VE Day, Victory in Europe Day. 80 years since the end of the Second World War, at least in Europe. What a destructive war that was. Millions of people killed. What desperation it brought. This is the hand of the evil one. But it's not just in history, and it's not just out there. Actually, if we're honest with ourselves, we see and feel the power of sin in our own hearts. Or it might be in more respectable ways than this man of the Gerasenes shows. It might be in the impatience that we show with our children or other people at work. It might be the bitterness or unwillingness to forgive people who ought to have done us better. It might be that driving desire that we have to be well thought of, which leads us to tell lies about ourselves, to make ourselves look good, or to be boastful and making sure that other people know the good things that we've done, or simply overworking to give the impression that we're so much better. Or it might be our lust for pleasure or money or sexual gratification. It might be the way we respond badly to the difficulties we face, or the things that we had to endure in the past. And sin affects us in so many ways. Now, of course, there are plenty of human solutions to all of these problems. All these behaviors will have their advocates for, well, this is what you need to do, this is what you need to do. But like the efforts of the townsfolk who tried to control this man and put him in chains, in the long run, human efforts do not work. So let us see how, just like this man, each one of us needs Jesus. If we're going to be delivered from the power of sin, we need Jesus Christ. Three headings. Firstly, let us see what sin and Satan will do for you. See what sin and Satan will do for you. No sooner had Jesus stepped out of the boat, and remember, he had calmed the storm on the Lake of Galilee. He'd come onto shore, and as he steps out of the boat on the other side of the lake, he's met by this man of the Gerasenes. The man, we're told in verse 27, was demon-possessed. In fact, he had many demons. Later, we're told his name is Legion, and a legion was nearly 6,000 soldiers. Doesn't necessarily mean he had 6,000 demons in him, but he had many demons. This man was in an utterly awful condition. What are demons? Well, Satan is a fallen angel, and when Satan rebelled against God, a whole host of angels also followed him. They're also fallen angels. They're what we call evil spirits or demons. We're not told how this man had come to be possessed by all these demons, but we are told how destructive it was for him. Let's just think about this man. Verse 27, when Jesus stepped ashore, he was met by a demon-possessed man from the town. For a long time, this man had not worn clothes or lived in a house, but had lived in the tombs. This is what the demons do for this man. He was far from other people. Though he was from that town, he no longer lived in the town. His behavior meant that he couldn't live with his family. He couldn't even live in a house on his own. Later we're told that the demon drove him into solitary places. What a life! And that is what sin and Satan do to people. Family life is disrupted. There's breakdown of family life. There's tension within the home, and people go their own way. And a person becomes more and more isolated. We see it with the alcoholic. We see it with the drug addict. But we see it with the selfish. We see it with the unforgiving. The breakdown of family life. The isolation. We see it across our society where in the past your typical household would have maybe four or five people in it. These days, far fewer. Breakdown of family life. That's what the power of Satan does. Then we see he wears no clothes. Now throughout the Bible, God is the one who clothes people. You remember the story in the Garden of Eden. After Adam and Eve had sinned, they felt their shame. They realized they were naked. They tried to cover themselves. It was inadequate. But God, in his grace, provided them with clothing, with animal skins. Three reasons. To cover their shame, to protect them, obviously if they're in cold climates, but also for modesty. 1 Timothy 2 and verse 9. We're told to dress modestly. Israel was likened to a naked baby abandoned in the wilderness. And God came and clothed that child and raised that child to become the nation of Israel. Spiritually, God clothes us with the garments of salvation, depicted in heaven as wearing white linen. God clothes people, but Satan unclothes people. It might be through destitution and utter poverty and being treated like a slave, or simply rebellion against the modesty that God requires. So this man is far from other people. He's wearing no clothes. And where was he living? In the tombs. He was more at home with the dead than with the living. He had no hope of living a wholesome life. He had no desire to live a wholesome life. He's living in the tombs. Can you imagine that? You sleep amongst the gravestones. It's like he's saying, my only prospect is death. This is the destructive power of Satan. This is what sin does to people. I said earlier, we can see a similar despair and hopelessness in the drug addict or the hardened criminal. But I want you to listen to some words of a very respectable person who described himself before he was converted as a zoo of lusts, a bedlam of ambitions, a nursery of fears, a harem of fondled hatreds. My name was Legion. The person who wrote that was a professor in Oxford, C.S. Lewis. He wrote it in his autobiography where he describes his conversion. He entitled the book, Surprised by Joy. He was honest with himself. You see, we can be respectable people, but inwardly, sin, like a growing cancer, is destroying us. Its deep-rooted tentacles control the heart of the sinful person. Oh, it may hide behind a facade of respectability. But sin leaves you more and more isolated from other people, exposed to shame, and with no prospect of a wholesome life. It's like a living death. And I want you to be honest with yourself. When you follow the path of sin, when you let the power of sin take control of your heart, is this not where it's leading you? This encounter between the man of the Gerasenes and Jesus is not meant to be all about someone else. It's meant to open our eyes. Yes, in an extreme and very obvious way. but to see that in principle, this is what sin is doing to us. Secondly, let's see how inadequate human attempts are at dealing with sin. Let's see how inadequate human attempts are at dealing with sin. Verse 29 describes how the people of the town tried to help this man. Jesus had commanded the impure spirit to come out of him. Many times it had seized him, and though he was chained hand and foot and kept under guard, he'd broken his chains and had been driven by the demon into solitary places. The people try and control him. They put his hands and feet in chains. They set a guard on him. They try and control him. But it didn't work. The man had unnatural strength because of his demon possession, and he simply broke the chains. No chain, no guard, however well-intentioned, could help or control this man. You see, the problem was, they were dealing with the symptoms, not with the spiritual cause. Maybe you've noticed reports this week of a young doctor who had a very severely inflamed right eye. And maybe it's only me who notices these sort of stories. It was really tragic. Nothing would help it. They couldn't work out what was going on with her eye. It was just swollen. It was painful. It was weeping. And, you know, she was a medical student while this happened and qualified, but life was so difficult because of this swollen, painful eye. Unsure of the cause, the ophthalmologist, they treated the symptoms. They didn't know what the cause was, and so, you know, very often, don't say always, but very often, when you don't know what the cause is, you treat it with steroids, or at least if it's inflammation. Please correct me, Sanjay, if I'm wrong here. But steroid eye drops didn't really help. Just got worse. At one point, she even thought, maybe I should just have the eye removed, have a false eye. Can you imagine that? But then a colleague suggested a new test that would test all the DNA from a sample from her eye, looking for any and every possible bug. And it turned out to be leptospirosis. A lot of blank looks on your face. Okay, apart from one. It's what you get in Biles' disease. Actually, she had probably contracted it swimming in the River Amazon on a trip to South America. A simple course of antibiotics was all she needed. Within a few weeks, completely better. You see, when you just treat the symptoms, things often get worse. You have to understand the cause. And human attempts at treating sin are dealing just with the symptoms, the impatience, the greed, the lust. They don't look at the cause, the spiritual cause. With bad behavior and addictive habits and wrong attitudes, human solutions are unable to help. Human ideas might be, well, some kind of restraint or some kind of therapy to improve the situation. Religions of the world will offer their ideas. Here are some rules that you need to keep, or here are steps that you need to take. Roman Catholicism is full of that. The different rules, the different steps you need to take, the different confessions you need to make. Oh, these are the saints that you need to pray to. Oh, you need to look to Mary. Or these are the images that will help you as you worship. These are the rites that you need to follow. And they have all those things that can never help. Seems to me, the more churches add, like the Roman Catholic Church has done, the less of the true answer they have. Who is Jesus Christ? Human solutions, be they religious, psychological, or physical, are no better than using a steroid cream for your eczema. It'll dampen it down for a time, but it's not going to cure it. Sorry about those. You've got extra. You see, the power of Satan and the grip of sin are spiritual problems. Here's the real problem. Behind my outward sins are deep-seated desires to please myself rather than God. That's the root of my sinful behavior. Put simply, I want to be God rather than gladly honoring God himself. And so I feel self-pity or indulge in self-gratifying behavior because I think I deserve better. I don't trust God to be my true joy. I try to control others because I want my life, my family, my friends to fit my plans. And so I spoil my relationships with other people. I don't draw close to certain people because, well, they may expose my sin or threaten what I want. And you see, I become more and more isolated. This is sin. It's a spiritual problem. And human attempts, I'm not belittling them completely. You know, there's a certain restraining power. You know, if you've got someone who's raving mad, well, chains sometimes can work. But it's not really the answer, is it? Human attempts at dealing with sin are limited and ultimately fail. Lastly, let's see the love of Jesus and the power of Jesus to overcome sin. Jesus crossed the Lake of Galilee. Jesus went through that terrible storm. Why? There's only one person he helped. It was this man. I love this story. Jesus crosses that lake, goes all that way through that terrible storm for one person. Because after delivering him from these demons, he gets back in the boat and goes all the way home. Isn't that the love of Jesus? And isn't that what Jesus has done? He's come all the way from heaven to this earth. Now, it wasn't just for one person. But you know, you get the impression that if it had been just for one person, he would have done it. Because though Christianity, of course, is a body of people, but it's also each of us loved by God. This is why I love Jesus. He came from heaven to earth, and he died on the cross for me. That's the love of Jesus. What a contrast to the people who try and help. Again, I don't want to belittle human solutions, but I don't know of anyone willing to lay down their life for me. Jesus Christ came from heaven to earth for you. That's love. He came into this world to save us. He said he came to seek and to save what was lost. He left the 99 sheep who didn't think they needed him, and he went like the shepherd looking for the lost sheep, the one. That's the love of Jesus. At first, the man's reaction was hostile, even though he recognized Jesus' power. Look at verse 28. When he saw Jesus, he cried out at the top and fell at his feet, shouting at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, don't torture me." There's a conflict here. His shrieking and pleading were because Jesus had commanded the spirit to leave the man. Jesus asks him, what is your name? It's possible that in gaining his name, Jesus was showing his power over him. Certainly, it was revealing more of the problem. His name is Legion. A whole host of demons are taking control of this man. But did you notice as we read, at no point is there any question about who is in control here? The conflict between Jesus and these demons is completely one-sided. It's not like a football match where, you know, you think, oh, right to the end, you're just not sure who's going to win. No. From the moment Jesus steps foot off that boat, and this man sees Jesus, and the demons recognize Jesus, there is no question that Jesus has complete authority over all of those demons. Verse 31. They beg Jesus repeatedly not to order them to go into the abyss. They're having to beg him. A large herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside. The demons begged Jesus to let them go into the pigs. And he gave them permission. He's in complete control. They went into the pigs, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and was drowned. Jesus allowed it. He's in complete control. He had commanded the unclean spirits to leave. And that's exactly what they had to do. Satan and his demons are powerful, but they are no match for the Son of God. And Jesus has delivered this man. What the people of the town were completely unable to do, Jesus, with a word, had done. Look at this man now. We're told he was sat at Jesus' feet, clothed and in his right mind. And look at his future. He's able to go home again. And look at his purpose and reason to live. Now he's going and telling people all over the town how much Jesus has done for him. He went and did what he was created to do. Live for the glory of God. He uses his life to tell people what God has done for him. Now he has a true purpose for living. Now he's back home. Jesus had delivered him. Jesus had such power that the grip of sin, the grip of those demons, was gone. He was sat at Jesus' feet, clothed, and in his right mind. This is the power of Jesus. It is completely unlike the human attempts at helping people with their bad behavior. Because Jesus goes to the very heart. He tackles sin at its root. He has complete authority and power. That's why we need him. And Jesus saves people, not so that they can live for their own prosperity and pleasures, but he saves people so they can live for the purpose they were made, for God's glory. You see, as Christians, so often, aren't we, we're tempted to go back to living for ourselves. And it's like sin comes back into our hearts. And we want to put ourselves in the place of God again. And we sin and we become miserable. And this is what the Christian should pray every day. Pray this each day as a Christian. Say, thank you, Lord Jesus, that you have saved me. You've forgiven me, but you've also delivered me from the grip of sin. Thank you. I confess where I have lived this day just to please myself. And I want to recommit myself to living for you, honoring your name, obeying you, and gladly speaking about you. Because until the day God glorifies us in heaven, we will have this ongoing struggle with sin. Oh, sin has lost its power. Sin is no longer our master, and yet it tries to take over again and again. And as Christians, we need every day to go back to Jesus. And where we've let sin take control, confess that. But you know, as Christians, we can look deep within. We don't need to be afraid. Because as we look deep within and see just how far sin and how terrible it reaches, we know there is someone greater. We know there is someone who can change us. We do not have to be dominated by our pride, by our resentment, by our lusts. We have a Saviour who can deliver us. You don't need 5 steps to holiness or whatever it might be. You don't need to pray to the saints. You don't need to... No. Jesus Christ. Him only. A true church focuses on Jesus. A true church proclaims Christ. We preach Christ and Him crucified. When He died on the cross, He defeated Satan. He is our hope. Every day I look to Him. He alone can deliver me from sin. This story comes with a challenge. As so often in Luke's Gospel, we find ourselves with two opposing groups. Here's this man who seems the worst of the worst. And here are the people of the town. They've tried to control him. They've tried to help him. We presume it was out of, you know, care for him. A degree of love for the man. They sought, but they couldn't help him. And here comes Jesus, and he really can help him. And then all these pigs end up being drowned in the water. And that attracts the attention of the people of the town. They come out and they see Jesus and they're afraid of him because they know he has such power that he has cast out these demons. But do they want Jesus? Do they want his help? Do they want him to deliver them from their sin? No, they say, go away. Do you know what? It's as if they would have preferred Jesus never to have come. Their love for that man was such a limited love. They would rather he was still living in the tombs, possessed by these demons, and they could still have had their pigs. And so we're left with this challenge. Here's the man on the one hand, and here are the people of the town on the other. Are we going to be like that man, delivered by Jesus? Or are we going to be like the people of the town who effectively say to Jesus, go away? Because that's the challenge this morning. Every one of us is responding, either like this man saying, Jesus, I want to be with you. I need you every day. Always saying, go away, Jesus. Each one of you, in your own heart, has one or other response. It's either a welcoming of Jesus. It's either saying, Jesus, you alone can help me. I'm going to trust you. I believe in your love that you came from heaven to earth for me. Not just across a lake, but from heaven itself. Such was your love. And I trust you. And I want to love you. And I want to live for you. Is that your response this morning? I hope it is. Or is your response that of the townspeople? Oh, you've seen something of the power of Jesus in other people, but it's too costly for you. You'd rather you'd never heard of him. Go away. We don't want you. Can I ask what your response is? Do you wish you'd never heard about Jesus? Or do you want to trust him? Do you wish he would go away and just leave you alone? Or do you love him? We have one or the other response. Jesus alone has the power to take away your sin, not just to forgive you, but to free you from its grip. Oh, call on him every day. Say, Lord, help me. Sin has come into my life again. Deliver me again today. Jesus alone loves you. Respond to his love. Trust him. Live for him. That's why you are made. Do you think this man was unhappy going around telling the town how much Jesus had done for him? You know, things that really excite us, we love telling people about it, don't we? You know, if my football team had been promoted yesterday, I'd be telling you. Ben can tell you afterwards about Bradford City. But we love to share the things that mean so much to us, and that's great. Do you think this man was sad that he had to spend his life telling people what Jesus? I think he loved it. And they knew what condition he'd been in. And they could see he'd changed. And you only hope that some of the people there thought, do you know what? We shouldn't have said no to Jesus. We shouldn't have asked him to go away. As far as we know, Jesus never returned to that town. Trust Jesus. He will not disappoint you. Devote your life to him. Let's pray.